Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt, as always. Today is Thursday, September 21st. Thursday night football. Gonna maybe be a little bit part of the schedule. Just do it while we're watching Thursday night football here, and then drop sometime Friday. I don't know what that does with the CEO or analytics or anything of the podcast, but we're just here for fun, here for vibes with everybody. So, you know?
Yeah, it's been a good first 2 weeks of football. We got Eagles week one, now we got the Niners.
Yeah, both our favorite teams were playing, which kind of made it easy to just plan around that for sure.
Right.
And next week's Detroit and Green Bay, which should be a good game as well.
Yeah, no, this is, and I feel like a lot of times Thursday are kind of crappy games. We'll have to see how the rest of the season goes, but so far so good.
Yeah, the Giants are holding tight, closer than I'd like them to be, admittedly, against the Giants. I was expecting, or 49ers, excuse me, I was expecting a blowout, so we'll see what happens. Can I talk about my relationship with the Giants and the Niners?
Yes, you can.
San Francisco Giants, that is.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about the NFL, college football. Matt's got the top five this week. Did you think of that?
I did think of it. I've got a list and everything. So.
Perfect. So Matt's got a top five this week. But we'll chat a little bit of baseball, because how I feel about the Giants, who are currently tied with the Los Angeles Dodgers, here's how depressing they are. I'm not watching the Giants-Dodgers, because since like July, they've been the worst team offensively in baseball. They were, I think, three or four games up on a wild card spot. Now they're three or four games back. They just keep losing. It's just so deflating. That being said, I'm like, you know, sad, bummed out, depressed. The 49ers are only up by 8 against the Giants, and I'm like yelling at Debo Samuel, you know, to get open, or Colton McKivitz to block better. Like, it's just when the 49ers do poorly, and poorly is, I have such a high standard for them, I just get furious. And when the Giants do poorly, I just want to comfort them.
Well, I think part of the problem is that the Niners have been incompetent for a pretty long time, That for me is always much more frustrating. So now I think the Niners are sort of starting to put things together. But even right now, only up 8 against the Giants, they're playing way below what their actual talent level is.
Yeah, my childhood was pretty rough, and by rough I mean my biggest problem was that the Niners didn't go to the playoffs. So it was a very good childhood, like overall. But, yeah. Like, just watching them lose stupid games to the Rams or lose to the Cardinals and miss the playoffs, or Alex Smith get 9 different offensive coordinators, it seemed like.
Right.
Or the going from Jim Harbaugh to, like, Eric Mangino. Jim Tomsula, that was his name.
Yes.
And then Chip Kelly. I, like, forget Chip Kelly was the 49ers coach.
Yeah, that was for a second. That was a weird time.
Weird 4-year stretch. And
yeah.
And now we got Kyle Shanahan. We got Brock Purdy. He's playing his worst game, I think, of his career. A lot of pressure in his face all night. Hasn't handled it well. I don't think the line, especially Colton McKivitz, I'm not a huge fan of at right tackle. But yeah. That being said, Brock Purdy's got to handle pressure a little better.
Right. Well, he was going to have a bad game at some point.
Yeah, right. I'd rather have a bad game against the Giants than like the Cowboys or the Eagles. So
for sure, yeah. And so, yeah, that is, you know, handling the pressure, that's something he's got to figure out how to do. But, you know, I mean, you know, Lamar Jackson and what's-his-face for the Bills, Josh Allen,
yeah. They
learn to be more accurate, so, you know.
And Purdy's just literally throwing the ball away. We're in past games, he's found, like, ways to escape time, and he's just, like, had some, like, when I say, they're not terrible, because they're, like, he's throwing it away on purpose, but he looks like he's bailing or, like, seeing ghosts, kind of. And I think the Giants defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale, plays a more unique scheme, like, a lot of pressure. I think more man defense than like an average NFL defense. So it's probably his first time he's seeing this stuff.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, better to throw it away than to throw it up the field with your eyes closed.
Exactly. In the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jimmy Garoppolo. I have a video saved of Stephen A. Smith, and like it's like just 4 seconds, and it's just him saying Jimmy Garoppolo. You think if I play from my phone into the mic, it'll work?
We can give it a shot.
Let's give it a shot. I'll see what I can pull up here. My disdain for Jimmy Garoppolo knows no bounds.
Yeah. Now, while Jake's finding this, just to go back to the Giants a little bit, they have kind of played, you know, for the last 3 years at least, played way above their talent level. And so that's why I think it's okay to not be mad at them, although this season does feel like, you know, this might be the actual end, even though they've been able to maintain for so long.
Yeah. Okay, I got it. Ready? This is Stephen A. Smith, my man.
My perspective is Jimmy Garoppolo needs to shut the hell up.
That's in my favorites on my camera roll.
Yeah.
I'm never going to be able to use it, I think, but I have it.
Yeah. I haven't heard Jimmy Garoppolo say anything to the media, frankly, so...
He's just at courtside NBA games with Christian McCaffrey and adult film stars.
Yeah, so we gotta just...
He really doesn't talk that much. No. Which is, I guess, a good quality for a quarterback.
Yeah, you know, better too little than too much.
I'm sure he's a great guy. Like, I've no reason to dislike him personally, other than he's caused me more pain than anyone else in my life.
Yeah.
Other than that, though.
Just frustrating quarterback.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of, mention the Cowboys and Eagles. I kind of want to talk about that, not because the Eagles are your favorite team, but just because that's the most interesting storyline, I think, in the NFL right now, at least the NFC, because before the season, it was Niners and Eagles. After two games, everybody has the Cowboys number one, and I think we need to pump the brakes a little bit. I'm assuming you're going to agree with me on that. And yeah, the Cowboys are good, but we expected them to be good and make the playoffs. But why are we, after two games against the Giants... And who did they play last week?
The Jets.
Yeah, what are we doing?
I mean, I feel like I don't really need to explain this, but my complaint with the Cowboys is that every year we talk about how great they are, and they've won five playoff games since 1995. And so it's just, but every year, just because they're so popular, we talk about them so much. I actually saved a thing from Colin Cowherd, who I generally actually don't like, but this is just a statistic that happened to be on his show. Let me see if I can.
Is it audio or just like a...
No, it's just a graphic that I want to look at. So by the way, this is fun. Besides the Patriots, the Cowboys or the Eagles have the most playoff wins of any team since 2000.
It's kind of sad you don't have a Super Bowl.
Yeah, we have a Super Bowl.
Just, oh, yeah,
just
sorry.
The one. But
the Nick Foles one.
Yeah, just because we went to the NFC Championship five times with Donovan McNabb and then only went to one Super Bowl.
I know. I wish we would have been a little older for that.
That would have been fun. Okay, but really quickly, teams with the same amount of playoff wins since 2000, the Texans, the Bills, who have only been good the last couple of years, and the Jaguars. Teams with more playoff wins, the Cardinals, the Chargers,
the Chargers,
the Atlanta Falcons, the Buccaneers, the Titans, the Giants, the Bengals, who've only had a good couple of years.
Yeah, the Bengals couldn't win a playoff game. That's why Andy Dalton's not in Cincinnati anymore. Couldn't win a play. He lost 4 years in a row. Awesome regular season. Couldn't win a playoff game.
Yeah, the Panthers have twice as many playoff wins as the Cowboys since 2000.
And is that two playoff runs when they lost in the Super Bowl?
Pretty much, yeah.
Like, it's probably from those two runs. I can't even think of another time they were in the playoffs.
Right, yeah, exactly. So it's just...
Everyone but the Jets, basically? And maybe the Browns?
Who have more?
Yeah.
No, the Jets have six, and the Cowboys only have four.
The Jets have six?
The Jets have
six. Oh, because they went to the AFC Championship twice.
Yeah, because they had that with Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
So, the only teams that have less than the Cowboys are the Bears with three, Commanders with one, Dolphins with one, Browns with one, and the Lions with zero.
Dude, let's talk about the Bears next, because I want to talk about Justin Fields. Yeah. But...
So just to say... You know, whenever the Cowboys look like they could be good, we talk about them going to the Super Bowl, and it is always more than it actually is. It's just people like the Cowboys and they want the Cowboys to be good, but they just have not been.
Like we're celebrating them. Here's the thing: the Giants game, the Giants aren't that bad, and the Cowboys aren't that good. Like, you know, pick six or like fumble touchdown for whatever. Like, things just snowball. Like, that's not a 40-0 talent level difference.
Right.
And the Jets just had their season derailed with Aaron Rodgers, and that was a closer game than the score indicated. Like, the Cowboys were in control, but also, like, Zach Wilson didn't play terribly. Like, they didn't dominate, even though they were in control that game.
Yeah, and a couple of those interceptions were just kind of Hail Mary end of the game.
So yeah, it's like garbage time you're chasing stuff. Like,
yeah. So anyway, now, do I think the Cowboys are going to make the playoffs? Yes, I do.
It's because the NFC is so poor.
Yeah, I think Micah Parsons is one of the 10 best players in the NFL right now.
Not better than Nick Bosa. But all these many people say that.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. He's very good.
Yeah, not best defensive player. T.J. Watt, I also think, is better than him.
You know what's annoying? So in that draft, because the Eagles traded, was it from 12 to 10 to get ahead of Dallas to get Devonta Smith?
Yes.
So Micah Parsons went at 11, and the Niners initially had the 12th pick.
Uh-huh.
So I don't remember who 12 was, but like the players it could have gotten instead of Trey Lance or like Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, like at with the 3 pick.
Holy cow.
I think Jamar Chase. No, that was a different draft, I think.
Yeah. So you could have had Nick Bosa on one side and Micah Parsons on the other side. Yeah.
And then Micah Parsons came out as a linebacker. So think if he's like partially a linebacker with Fred Warner and then partially rushing the edge with Nick Bosa.
Right, yeah. No, that would be crazy.
Or like think if they had Jalen Waddle in this offense, in Kyle Shanahan's offense.
Yeah. But why would you draft that when you could draft a guard?
I don't know.
Which tends to be the trend for you guys.
Here's what's crazy. Like, the Trey Lance thing, I don't know if we ever, like, really, really talked about it. He just hasn't played. Like, I would rather take a shot on Trey Lance than Zach Wilson, for example. And here's why. Is there a good chance that Trey Lance is worse? Yeah. We don't know that, though. I feel like we know with so many of these other guys.
Right.
Like, Trey Lance has played, like, because it's college football season where he was a starter got canceled, so he played one game there. He didn't play that much in high school. He started like 3 NFL games, and then one of them was in a hurricane in Chicago. We just don't know if he's good.
How did I would like you to explain, partly for me, partially to the listeners, how did he not play very much in high school?
I don't think he started till like his senior year or like maybe his junior year, because he only went to North Dakota State.
So he just has like the best measurables possible.
Freak athlete. Yeah, he's not Anthony Richardson, and he's super talented, like unbelievable arm talent. But the NFL, like quarterback more than any other position, is just about reps. Like a few years ago, there was an article I read about why Texas was producing so many quarterbacks, and I think some other states have caught up to this. But it's because the entire year they're playing 7-on-7 in Texas. So like Andrew Luck, for example, from like 7th or 8th grade, his whole life was just, you know, pass 7-on-7, like training camp, 2-a-days, football, whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're just, he's seen so many reps.
Right.
Where that's part of what made him so good, in addition to, like, the arm talent and everything, is he just seen so much.
Yeah.
And quarterback especially, because I'm all for playing multiple sports, I'm not saying that. I think other positions don't need it as much. But quarterback is just repetition. Like, we're seeing with Brock Purdy, it's the first time he's seeing pressure, I think, like this and this type of coverage, like to this extent, at least in the NFL.
Yeah.
And he just hasn't seen it. Like where Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, anybody, you know what I mean? Even like Andy Dalton, who's not as good as Brock Purdy, but he's just seen so much. I think he'd be able to handle that type of pressure better than right. Brock Purdy today.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Now, speaking of 7-on-7, I feel like, you know, because football is just really only in fall, I wonder if there's sort of an untapped potential for 7-on-7. And just an example, me and you have sometimes gone down to Las Vegas to see a sevens rugby tournament, which is not the same as 7-on-7 football, but they're 15-minute games, and you get to see, you know, probably, I don't know, 8 to 12 games in a single day that are like 15 minutes.
The rugby tournament?
Yeah, the rugby tournament.
Super fun.
I think it'd be fun if in the spring, you know, people go to the spring game, those sell out. If you could get like 8 college football teams and just have a 7-on-7 tournament, people would pay good money to go to that.
That, yeah, for sure. 7-on-7 is fun to watch, I think.
Right, yeah, and I think most people haven't seen it. I wouldn't know what it is if it's not for you. It's pretty much just, you know, No linemen, and you're not tackling pretty much, right?
Yeah, so like the quarterback has 4 seconds to throw. You get, you know, your 5 receivers and someone to, like, really on offense, it's 5, like, 5 receivers. Like, snapper is kind of a bummer.
Right.
And then you're either playing, you're just playing, like, cover 2 or cover 3 or man with, like, a couple safeties deep. And you just get 4 seconds to throw. So it's just kind of repping, like, different coverages. It's not super realistic because there's no pressure and you're never having 4 seconds just like straight in the pocket.
Right.
But it's the reps, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's just seeing stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be interesting.
Yeah, so that makes sense. But yeah, you know, Brock's still young, so I think this will be a good game for him. And it's nice that it's happening in week 3 instead of week 16.
Yeah, seriously. And again, against the Giants, like, I don't think he's played poorly, but I haven't seen him, like, create as much or do, like, make, you know, do stuff that other, like, other 49ers quarterbacks haven't been able to do in the past.
Right.
But I think, I'm not saying, like, he's bad or, like, I'm out on him. I'm just saying, like, he hasn't seen this type of defense. But it's just because it's a more unique. There's, like, 2 or 3 defensive schemes and, like, 2 or 3 offensive systems that are, like, widely used in the NFL. I don't think anyone really does what the Giants do or, like, what Wink Martindale does to that extent.
Right.
And Belichick does his own thing every week, so I don't really count that.
Yes, yeah, that's always going to be weird playing them.
So, let's talk about Justin Fields. Do you see the coach comment that he said? They got kind of taken out of context.
No, I have not seen that.
So, Justin Fields played, who I loved, more than everyone except Trevor. And it was like, I might have taken Justin Fields ahead of Trevor. Probably not. But, like, I love Justin Fields. They were the number one and number two player, like, back and forth since high school going forth. So he gets to the NFL. He falls to like 11th pick or 9th. Wasn't, yeah, Fields was 11, 12, 9.
In that rate.
Something like, yeah.
It was after 10 and after 11.
So the Niners could have got Justin Fields with their initial pick instead of trading 3 for Trey Lance then.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So Fields played poorly. Not all, like, the line was bad, but there were definitely some things. Fields holding the ball too long. Kind of, and he, this is a quote for him, he used the term kind of robotic, not super comfortable. Reporter asked him why, and he said coaching, and he basically was saying, like, you know, I'm just thinking of, like, what they're telling me, what reads I'm supposed to do. He's basically was saying, like, he's overthinking it, not blaming the coaching staff necessarily.
Right.
But that comes back to the reps. You want to just have it internalized. Where he's not at that point yet. He's just, you know, trying to think, okay, if this happens, I got to do this. If this happens, I got to do this. Instead of just being part of how he plays quarterback.
Right.
So, it's not looking good in Chicago, who apparently have won less games than the Cowboys in the playoffs. So, that's suboptimal.
Yeah, no, that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
So.
Now, I don't think he had any of these problems at Ohio State. Didn't have them in college. Now, obviously, a lot easier and a lot simpler.
Uh-huh.
At Ohio State, they have a very quarterback-friendly – I don't think we should hold this against them, but it is a very quarterback-friendly offense that Ryan Day runs at Ohio State. But he has a talent. Like, he's been, like, the guy with Trevor Lawrence. He didn't all of a sudden just not be good at football. Pure talent-wise, I think he's top 5 in the league. I just think the Bears have done a bad job of roster building, bad job of coaching. I didn't like that they hired a defensive coach, and then that draft after him, their first like 3 or 4 picks were all on defense at least.
Yeah. No, you've got to, you know, if you've got a young quarterback, especially if he's not playing well at the beginning, you want to get tools to help him out.
Yeah, because the benefit of a quarterback on a rookie contract is you can pay people everywhere else. Like the Niners are like top 3 paying like receivers, defensive, like linebackers, edge players, defensive tackle. They're like the top 3 in the NFL, like all those positions.
Right.
Because Brock Purdy's on like a literally the cheapest contract in the NFL.
Yeah.
And the Bears aren't taking advantage of that. You got to be in a good position where like the Lions, what they're doing, they're building. They have a good team. If they decide to move off of Jared Goff and go to a rookie quarterback next year, they're going to be in a great position.
Sure.
Where the Bears are like, oh, this guy's good, let's get him. And I get that for sure. But they clearly don't have the culture, don't have the coaching staff. It's not a good situation. And I think there's so many players who go into a bad situation. Like Zach Wilson, for example. I wasn't as high on him as most people were. I still thought he could be a good quarterback. He definitely has the talent for it. But what if he goes to San Francisco instead of the Jets? You know what I mean?
He looks a lot better than he did last year.
I think Zach Wilson would have been awesome in this offense because I think it'd be a lot simple, asking him to do a lot less. It's so many about situation. Like, we were talking about Josh Rosen. He probably was more of a bust than some of these other guys we're talking about because you asked me earlier who's one player you were wrong on, and Josh Rosen's probably the biggest one that comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
Just because I remember his true – well, I watched him in high school, but his true freshman year – at UCLA, his first game, I think he had like 5 passing touchdowns against Virginia. And then he came to BYU and where we were students at the time and, like, carved BYU up, I was like, man, this guy's amazing.
Yeah. That was a fun game, though.
Was a fun game.
Yeah, I believe BYU had a chance to win, despite how good UCLA was doing, unless I'm thinking of a different game.
Here's one complaint I have, and we can go back to the fields, but UCLA with their gold face mask, that's maybe the best helmet in college football, and with their gray face mask, excuse me.
Yeah.
I think the gold face mask looks stupid.
Right. And they probably wear the gold all the time.
Yeah, they only wear the gold now. Like, I think it was Chip Kelly, they switched from gray to gold. Maybe before. But the gray face mask with, like, those colors, the gold helmets.
Right.
Classic.
Yeah, those are good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you'd think UCLA. It's weird that, like, even in basketball, they've had a few rough years. I know they've done well in the tournament, but they haven't been able to get a high seed in a really long time, it feels like.
No, you think it'd be the easiest place to recruit because it's in LA. It's the most. Like, it's more of a blue blood than any football program. Like, there's not a comparable football program to UCLA basketball.
Right.
Every NBA player plays there all offseason.
Yeah.
I think their problem is Cronin's head coach, and I think he's kind of a – I think he's kind of a jerk. I don't think people just like him that much.
Yeah.
From what I've heard, I don't know the guy, obviously, so this is all third-party info. But it was crazy he was, like, their sixth or seventh option at head coach.
Yeah, you would think that, like – I don't know, if I was a basketball coach and it's like I want to go to the best place to win, UCLA's got to be the top place.
In the Pac-12, it's them in Arizona. Like, I know Oregon's been good. Like, the Pac-12's not that good of a basketball conference.
No, it's not.
Like, if you get the right guy at UCLA, there's no reason that shouldn't be the best team in the country, I think.
Yeah.
And it also happens to be in Los Angeles, which probably outside New York if we're talking, like, talent. I don't know high school basketball town as much as high school football, but I don't see L.A. being a bad place to recruit.
No, yeah, there's got to be some good players from there.
Yeah. So anyway, UCLA should be better at basketball. They're pretty good football. That game against Utah this week is going to be a pretty big game.
Yeah.
I think UCLA has a shot. Their true freshman quarterback, Dante Moore from Detroit, who was committed to Oregon before flipping to UCLA, he's legit. He's in the same class as Arch Manning.
Yeah.
I think there's a chance we're talking about Dante Moore. Now, Arch Manning hasn't played, obviously, yet. But I think Dante Moore is good enough where he can still be the best quarterback in that class. And a very good quarterback class. The true freshmen, like Tennessee's got a real good one. There's a bunch of really, really good quarterbacks who are true freshmen right now.
Yeah, well, that's a lot to put him above Arch Manning just because you know he's got the talent. You're talking about reps. You have to think that he's been, you know, thrown to routes and learning routes in the backyard since he was about six.
Arch?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, think, like, I'm sure he was watching film as, like, a junior high kid.
Yeah.
He probably understands how to be a professional from a perspective of, like the film study and how to conduct yourself at practice and what to practice and things like that. And, like, being, like, OCD in a good way about football.
Sure, yeah. No, he's got, you know, he could do, you know, three incredibly different productive phone calls after every game.
Yeah, definitely. So. Well, and Cooper, not his brothers, but he, college wide receiver, like, before he had the neck, was it a neck injury, his father?
I don't know if it was a neck injury, or I'm sure it was, but they did an x-ray, and there was some problem with the alignment of the vertebrae or where the spinal cord was, and they thought that another injury could be catastrophic.
Yeah. But, like, he was a good football player in and of itself.
Yeah, for sure.
And speaking of situation, if Archie Manning doesn't go to New Orleans, if he goes to, like, a better franchise, I think he's talked about in a more revered way other than he's like, oh, Arch was cool. I think we're talking about him as a better quarterback.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Archie Manning's sick. Like, his New Orleans stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it'll be interesting. I was saying Dante Moore's really good. I'm not saying, like, he's for sure better, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's who we're saying is the number one pick in that draft class in 3 years.
Right, yeah, something to watch for sure.
Yeah. Should we go to my week four picks?
Let's do it.
From that?
Yeah.
So last week was rough. 1-4. Let's see who I had last week. So I had Arkansas -7.5, BYU won outright, which, you know, go Cougars. Kansas State -3.5. Missouri hit that 61-yard field goal to win at the end of regulation. That was tough. Colorado -23.5. I thought they were going to blow them out. Probably a little bit distracted with the Rock and Lil Wayne on campus in game day and college football. Like, I just don't think Colorado players or students know how to handle that. Just
sure,
you know.
Yeah, and rivalry games are. I know we talked about how it's probably not actually a very intense rivalry, but it is still a rivalry, and I feel like those are going to be close, no matter what.
For sure. Western Kentucky plus 28.5. That one was just not even close. That was like the worst pick of the year. So that was my bad.
Yeah.
Fresno State minus 3. They won 29-0. So that one was right. So I'll take my flowers on that one. So this week is good. Last week was tough because there was no like ranked matchups, no conference games. This week there's a lot of really good games. It's the most ranked matchups in September since like 2006 or something like that.
Yeah, no, I was looking at, you know, what was coming up this weekend. It looks really, really fun.
There's a lot going on, and I'll have to be watching it on my drive to Rock Springs, Wyoming, because I'm going to watch my favorite cousin play in her community college soccer game up there.
Yeah, shout out to Addie.
Really excited to see her. Not excited about Rock Springs, but I love her, so I'm excited to go there. So here are the games this week. Notre Dame, plus 3 at home against Ohio State. Sam Hartman's the best quarterback Notre Dame has had since Brady Quinn. Notre Dame has, I think, the best offensive line in the country. They have a improved wide receiver core, good running back group, improved defense. My concern with Notre Dame heading into the season was their offensive coordinator, and he's been fantastic this year.
Yeah.
So I think I only have them ranked like 9th or 10th just because there's so many good teams. But I don't see a reason why Notre Dame can't be a top 4 team. They got to win this game, though.
For sure.
Next one, Ole Miss plus 7. That's at Alabama. I think there's a lot going on. I think Lane Kiffin would love to beat Alabama. Oh, I think Ole Miss, a lot of people are kind of nitpicking them. When in reality, they haven't played any good teams. Tulane's really good, but their quarterback was out. They're going to be up for Alabama for sure. Alabama, you know, Jalen Milroe's starting. Jalen Milroe's not starting. Now he's starting again. Still have the same issues. So how is Tommy Rees going to react to that? I think Ole Miss can keep it close. I would actually pick him to win, but I think they can keep it close at Alabama, just because they have the offense to score, and I want to see what Alabama's offense looks like. Still unsure about that.
Uh-huh.
Were you going to say something?
No, I don't think so.
So next one, USC minus 34.5. They're playing Arizona State, who just lost to Fresno State 29-0. I think if USC wins by 50, if USC doesn't cover, it's because they're not taking the game seriously, which is possible. But their true freshman, Zachariah Branch, ooh, touchdown from Debo. What a play.
It was a great catch.
Debo's the man. South Carolina has a really good receiver, Xavier Leggett, who Debo went to South Carolina, is why I brought that up.
Yeah. Now, as I said, I think you may be overreacting a little bit to the game. I know you would have liked them to win by more. I think a lot of the problem is they're not converting in the red zone, but I feel like Brock Purdy's still getting them in positions, and so well, like you're going to have at least 30 points.
There's been two... at least two red zone drives that are field goals instead of touchdowns.
Right.
Against the Eagles or Giants, if we don't score touchdowns in the red zone, we lose that game.
For sure.
The easiest way to lose a game is turnovers. Second easiest, not scoring touchdowns in the red zone. You only get so many chances there.
Definitely, yeah.
So I don't even think Purdy's playing bad. I'm just saying he looks average.
Yeah, and I just say that to say, you know, he's not turning the ball over. He's not, you know, going three and out. So, like, he's still doing productive. He's still doing good things. He's just not doing great things, which is, I guess, your
which is what I'm used to. Again, that's kind of my high standard, that probably unfair high standard with the Niners.
Yeah.
So, but again, right now they're up 30-12, so I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, I feel like you got 30 points. You got to be happy.
Yeah, and I got Debo on my fantasy team, so I'm happy with that as well. So he's at, like, 19 points right now. I know everybody cares about my fantasy team. But, yeah, honestly, Arizona State's the worst team in the Pac-12. Like, they're really bad. If USC wants to, they could do what TCU did against Texas Tech and, like, run out of fireworks when Trevon Boykin was there that 2014.
Oh, that was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Like, TCU won, I think it was 82-10. It was 82-something. 82-not-a-lot. USC could do that if they wanted to. I don't think they will, but I think they still win handily.
For sure.
Okay, now this is the one we talked about before the season. And it's finally here. Florida State minus 2.5 against Clemson in Clemson. Before the season, we talked about this was going to be a preview of the ACC Championship. And then Clemson put on a clinic on how to not win a football game against Duke in that game.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Everyone's off on Clemson. It's still at home. Clemson has looked better the last couple games, granted against, I think, Charleston Southern or Charleston and Florida Atlantic. So how are they going to play against who I think is the third best team in the country? Florida State looked dominant against LSU. Keon Coleman, probably the second best wide receiver in the country. Besides, he's so athletic. He played like for Michigan State's basketball team for a season. Like played, not on the team, like played. It wasn't like, oh yeah, you can suit up.
Right.
And if you have to be, if you're playing for Tom Izzo, you gotta be legit.
For sure, yeah.
Like he wouldn't just like let someone like even wear a jersey, let alone get on the court.
Absolutely.
Like Keon Coleman is probably the funnest player to watch in the country, I think, when he has the ball. You can score in a variety of ways. So I think Florida State covers. I'm excited for the game, though. And if they do, I think Clemson already have two losses before September's over, two conference losses.
Mm-hmm.
I think Florida State's going to lock up a trip to the ACC Championship if they win, unless they fall off the cliff. Not worried about the game last week. I just think that was looking ahead to Clemson.
Right.
I think we start looking North Carolina, Duke, or Miami, who will be playing them in the conference championship game. I think any of those three teams are capable. I think Duke has – I have North Carolina ranked higher. They have the best player out of any of those teams.
Sure.
I think – or Miami has the best coach probably, and Tyler Van Dyke's really good. Everyone loves Riley Leonard. I would take Van Dyke over Leonard probably, but maybe I'm wrong. I think Miami has the most talent, North Carolina's best quarterback, and Duke does have a really good team.
Yeah, and for Duke to already have the win over Clemson is huge.
That is massive. They're definitely head up.
Yeah, because Clemson is going to beat one of North Carolina or Miami, if not both.
Oh, absolutely.
So for Duke to already have that win is going to be very, very important.
Yeah. But anyway, so I think Florida State beats them. And then Washington, -21.5 against Cal. I think the game's in Berkeley. I will admit I forgot. But honestly, it could be anywhere. Like, Washington looks good. They're dismantling teams. And watching Cal play Auburn, that was probably, like, the worst performance I've seen from a college team. I can't remember thinking, like, how is this a Power 5 team? You know, I've seen bad teams. We've all seen bad teams. Cal against Auburn, I was like, what is going on? Like, is this the first time they've put on pads together? Did they get the quarterback from off the street? I don't want to pile on him, but like nothing was good. It looked like they hadn't been coached or watched film or had any idea. The kicker missed three field goals. That's how like they could have won. Like Auburn was bad too.
Right.
Like that was worst game in the sense of like both these teams are terrible that I've probably ever watched in my life.
Yeah.
So I don't see Washington. Like 21.5 is not a lot for Washington, who just put it on Michigan State.
Sure.
So that's my picks. I feel much better about these than last week. So Notre Dame +3 at home. I do think there'll be a lot of Ohio State fans, but I think Ohio State, I don't think they're overrated. I think Notre Dame's underrated though. I think Sam Hartman's underrated.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I do think this is, you know, the least hyped Ohio State team in a very long time.
Yeah.
So
they did. Now, that being said, I pitched against Ohio State last week, and they made me look like an idiot. So could be wrong.
So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So those are my picks. So I'm 7-8. I'm hoping to get back to above 500 after this week. What are your thoughts? Any like or don't like?
Of those picks, I like the Notre Dame one. I think that makes sense. I think, you know, from the Western Kentucky game, I learned that, you know, when teams have huge advantages, I think it's probably good. I mean, I'm sure statistically Vegas has figured it out, but I think the USC game, it makes sense for them to get a lot of points, especially, you know, I think they'd like to get Caleb Williams another Heisman, so I think they're going to go for that. I think they're trying to show the playoff committee. So I think there's a lot of reasons why they're going to try to
run. If you're Arizona State, you beat Southern Utah by 3. You just got housed by Fresno State. And speaking of places easy to recruit, when I went to Arizona State on my grad school visit for journalism, I felt like they had like planted girls in like sports bras and Lululemons. Like I felt like that was part like a charade. Like I was like, there cannot be this many people here.
Right.
Or, like, going out to, like, Mill. Like, Arizona State would be a fun place to go be a football star.
Yeah, you like just living close to Arizona State.
Yeah, I love just being in the proximity. Like, how are they not better? Like, there's no reason we, as people who live in Salt Lake City, mom's a professor there, the University of Utah should not be better than Arizona State in football. There's no natural advantage other than Polynesians, which that, albeit, is a big one. Utah has much more Polynesians. Other than that, there's no natural advantage Utah has to Arizona State.
Yeah, certainly not forgetting, you know, what has been Utah's strategy is getting a lot of college, community college transfers.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, you'd think Arizona State, they should, there's no reason they can't do that.
No reason. No. So, I mean, that shows how Kyle, I think Kyle Whittingham, I think most people think this, Kyle Whittingham, at, without having the list on paper, top 10 coach for sure.
Top 10 coach all time?
In the country.
Right
now.
In the country, I think there's no question.
Oh, yeah, no question for sure.
Yeah, I would put him top five pretty easy, I think.
I'd just have to, I'm sure I would. I'd have to think, like, I don't want to miss anybody, but I would put him, so Nick Saban's obviously number one.
Right.
I don't like Brian Kelly, but I kind of feel like if you're the winningest coach in Notre Dame history, you have to be number in the top five.
Yeah.
So we'll put him in there.
Kyle Whittingham's certainly doing the most with the least.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Utah and Iowa consistently have, like, the most NFL production, NFL draft picks, wins per, like, star, like, recruiting ranking.
Yeah.
And Utah's actually starting to recruit pretty well, too.
Yes.
Like, they're getting, like, top 25 classes. Like, I think they can go in a position, and they're not going to, like, dominate, like, go undefeated every year, but I think they're going to be the best Big 12 program. Like, them, TCU, Texas Tech is doing a good job.
Yeah, that's interesting without Oklahoma there.
I am worried. Utah recruits a lot out of California, and actually Arizona State does as well in Arizona. But, like, all three of those schools recruit heavily out of California. Utah does a lot in Texas as well, in Florida, out of those schools.
Right.
But, like, those three schools losing their California recruiting bases, I am interested to see how that affects. Because Utah recruits out of California more than anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that.
Or more than any other state. I should, like, not obviously, like, everyone recruits California, but.
Yeah, that is going to be tricky. It's going to be easier for them to go to Texas, but I also feel like Texas just has so many hands going in there.
Including now. The entire SEC.
Right. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to be as promising as people might think that it is for them.
No, I am worried about that. I wonder, and I would assume, well, here's the thing, because California, Utah, I would like to think, is going to have more of a footprint than Penn State and Iowa and California, even though they're in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe not in 5 or 10 years from now, but I think the next 2 to 4 years, I think they've already got a lot of those connections. So I think they're going to be able to keep it up for a couple of years at least.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I'm just worried not playing there. And, like, but also, like, I feel like natural footprint doesn't really matter as much anymore, so Utah will probably be fine.
Yeah.
You know who's a good coach? Dave Shaw, Stanford.
I mean, it's been a while since
I know he's not coaching right now.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, but Stanford with the transfer portal, with academic standards, like, I think that's been the most negatively affected school than anybody else. Plus, Dave Shaw was talking on the Ryan Russillo podcast, like, they got a new chancellor or, like, president or whatever they call it. And not that they're, like, anti-football, but the old one was, like, all in on football and recognized, you know, the better football does, the better other athletics do, the more admissions or, like, applications they get.
Right.
It's better for the university. And Dave Chow pointed out, like, at Stanford, we're supposed to be leading. We should be leading in NIL and the transfer portal while not lowering their academic standards. And he's if I could play, if I was actually good, and could play for anyone, I think Nick Saban would probably be number one, if we're not counting, like, the school.
Yeah.
But Dave Shaw might be a close second of, like, coaches I'd want to play for. Like, really respect him. I think he'll get an NFL job within a year or two, and I expect him to do really well.
Yeah. I like that.
So I was not expecting to talk about David Shaw on the show today.
No, I think that's a good pick, though.
Okay. So those are college football picks, NFL talk. Do you want to talk a little soccer? Do you want to jump into the top five? What do you think?
Let's go to the top five.
We're at 40 minutes right now. Niners just got another pick. Feeling good.
Yeah, just because we want to talk about Miami FC and Messi and their playoff chase. But I think next week they'll have another game or two. And so it'll be and so I think we'll have a little clearer picture of what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
Okay, but top five. Jake's had a busy week, and so he assigned me the top five this week.
I've been swamped, so.
Yeah.
Also, you should probably do it more often anyways, too. Like, I shouldn't have, I not have to, but, like.
Right.
Be more diverse if you did it, you know?
Yeah. But anyways, so what we're going to do this week are the top five players who have the greatest distance between them and whoever is second at specifically their position, not necessarily the sport, although I'm looking at it, some of these are the sport. And so just for example, one we talked about, who actually didn't even make my top five once I started thinking about it, was the distance between Jerry Rice to Randy Moss.
That didn't end up making your top five because that was what you led with.
That's what I led with. That's kind of where I got the idea. But as I thought about it more and more, I think there are bigger gaps.
Okay.
And so, and he was actually on the list until somebody that I came up with. There was actually two people I came up with that I would put above him. One did not make the list, but I'm 100% you're going to bring him up, which is why I gave the edge to the other guy.
Okay.
So number five, Lance Armstrong, who, yeah, he did steroids, so did everybody else. That's not really the discussion. He was, so a reasonable margin of victory for the Tour de France is, you know, 30 seconds to a minute and a half. If you win by 2.5, 3 minutes, you're really, really killing the competition. Lance Armstrong for 7 years was winning by 5.5, 6 minutes, just way ahead of the nearest competition. I think the biggest example is in a time trial, which is when they start everybody 3 minutes apart and see how fast everybody can go by themselves. He passed Jan Ulrich, which was his biggest rival. And passing someone in a time trial in cycling is the only comparable thing I can think of is Vince Carter dunking over that dude in the Olympics. Like, just absolutely crazy to pass someone in a time trial. So I've got Lance Armstrong at five, Lawrence Taylor at four, which honestly you can probably talk about more than me.
Lawrence Taylor is a freak.
Like, yeah, that's, I just hear, you know, people talk about great defensive players, and then anytime somebody says Lawrence Taylor, people get scared.
Yeah.
And so that's why I had him there.
We should, if the Niners weren't playing, I'd pull up YouTube highlights of Lawrence Taylor just because he's so unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got him at four. I've got Usain Bolt at three, which I've a little bit of mixed thoughts about just because, you know, comparing track errors is so hard with, like, Jesse Owens running on cinder tracks and things. But specifically in the 200, just, you know, how far ahead he was of everybody else is just absolutely incredible. Only person to defend his 100-meter trial at the Olympics, and he did it three times. So, number two, Mondo Duplantis. Do you know who Mondo Duplantis is?
I'm sure once you start talking, I'll remember you telling me about it before.
He's a pole vaulter from Sweden.
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah. Went to LSU with Sha'Carri Richardson.
Go Tigers.
Yeah. And so he has the top four highest jumps. And I think a lot of times people expect pole vaulters to break the world record by just 1 centimeter at a time because then they get a bonus for every time they break the world record. But he's broken it by, you know, 2 centimeters, 5 centimeters, so that's not exactly the case. So, yeah, the top four jumps of all time, and then I think it's, like, 8 of the top 10. And then, yeah, I'm just kind of briefly looking at this, but I think, like, you know, 11 of the top 16. So just really, really... you know, way ahead of everybody else. And then number one, I had Michael Jordan. And I just thought the gap, you know, because I think we both really like Kobe, but I also think, you know, on the all-time basketball list, he's coming in at number, you know, 10 or 11 at best.
You're talking about shooting guards specifically, not basketball.
Yes, I'm specifically talking about shooting guards because, you know, and that's a reason LeBron James didn't make it because, you know, you got Kevin Durant, you've got Larry Bird, and some other small forwards are really good. But, you know, with shooting guard, it's Michael Jordan, Kobe, and then Dwayne Wade, I think, are the top three. And I think Dwayne Wade is...
Was Jerry West a shooting guard?
I don't remember. But
Manu Ginobili? Yes. Like, I get your point. Right, yeah.
Yeah, no, shooting guard, I think, is the thinnest, you know, position.
Which is crazy because that's kind of like the prime position because of Michael Jordan.
Right, well, we think of it because of the prime position because of him, I think. I think, yeah, power forward for a long time, centers have been really important, and that's so hard to compare. But, like, I didn't pick a center because, like, how, like, Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, I feel like, are so close.
Yeah.
Even though I love Bill Russell. So anyway, those are my top five. The person I assumed you were going to bring up was Barry Bonds.
From a pure hitting perspective?
Yeah, or left, I don't know enough about baseball to compare him to other left fielders.
Yeah, I mean, unless I'm blanking that, like, Ted Williams played left field or something like that, you know what I mean?
Right.
But, Google, because you have a computer up, like, best left fielders of all time. Do you know what's a crazy stat? Ever since Bonds retired, the Giants have had a different starting left fielder on opening day every single year.
That's crazy. Ted Williams played left field.
So we can't play Barry. Left field, power position, the two best hitters of all time.
Yeah, let me see. I'll type that in real quick.
Ted Williams is the only person I accept when we talk about Willie Mays not being the best player or Barry Bonds not being the best hitter. Now, I disagree. But he's the only person I'll even say, okay, I understand your argument.
Yeah. So let's see. ESPN has – I'm going to start at one because I think that's where Ted Williams and Barry Bonds are going to be. So, yeah, they have Ted Williams one, Barry Bonds two. Next they have Ricky Henderson.
Oh, I thought he was like a third base – he was left fielder? Yeah. He would be fun like today with like how like the pitch clock and like no shifts and like – you can't just keep throwing over to the first.
Yes.
He would steal like 40 bases.
Yeah. And then they have Pete Rose and Carl Yastrzemski.
Mike Yastrzemski's grandfather.
Mike Yastrzemski's grandfather, exactly. So I do think I would put, you know, Barry Bonds and Ted Williams way ahead of those other guys.
You know what's tough is if I was making like a fantasy team of just like people I'd want to see play, all three of those, Ricky Henderson, Ted Williams, and Barry Bonds would be on that team. So we're making him stick at left field. But also, maybe we'll make one DH because, like, Willie, we can't just put him all in the outfield because Willie Mays has got to be there.
Sure.
But then you like, Barry Bonds DHing in an outfield like Ricky Henderson, Ted Williams, and Willie Mays.
Yeah.
And, like, those guys are, like, batting 1-4 or something.
That'd be
I would funny. Have to think of the infield, but that'd be a fun team.
Yeah. That would be very fun. You know, it would be fun to, you know, do a baseball thing if I knew a little more baseball to, you know, go in some positions. But, like, I didn't think, you know, there was a catcher that was going to be – like, I thought catcher was going to have a lot of good guys at the top. Pitcher, I thought it would have been really hard to pick.
Yeah.
So, I did not –
baseball's tough.
Yeah, I did not put Michael Phelps. And the reason I didn't
– I thought that was going to be your number one.
No, well, the reason I didn't put Michael Phelps – and this is why I always put Usain Bolt ahead of Michael Phelps – Michael Phelps lost the 200-meter butterfly in the 2012 Olympics, and you cannot lose your best event when Usain Bolt is setting records in his, and like you wouldn't even consider that he would lose the 200 meters.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's why, you know.
I think less people know that that's like Bolt's thing. Like I think if they're watching the Olympics, they know that. But you know,
right? Yeah. So it's just, yeah, Michael Phelps is definitely great, but Usain Bolt was absolutely more dominant.
Definitely. Awesome. Okay, well, great top five, great show. Niners won 30-12. Game's over, so that'll probably coincide with our bedtime here. Appreciate everybody listening, all the support on, like, the TikToks, at MJ Doubletake, on the podcast reviews. Like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. Really helps us out. Leave a comment. You know, all the typical YouTuber. Smash the like button, all that fun stuff. Appreciate everybody doing that. Appreciate y'all listening. We'll talk to y'all next week.